Wow, I don't know. That's a high expectation that you're leading with. So the last topic that we wanted to chat just briefly on was transition, and as many of you are aware, we didn't get to this topic when we met in November, but we had pulled together some materials on it, and clearly a number of people commented on the impacts of transition when you then, with the ED proposals, then subsequent to transition, there was actually increasing expense or income in the periods post the transition period, and a number of comments related to that. So we had put forward a couple different approaches to deal with that, and I think a number of the things that have changed in the model and the discussions that we have, that will be kind of the aftermath of that. But to the extent that there are comments or suggestions about transition, and I was surprised we hadn't heard the word leverage leases yet come up, so this is your opportunity to perhaps bring that up. But we're aware of leverage leases, dealing with that on transitions, sale leaseback transitions, kind of the date that you make a classification conclusion, some of the assumptions made there, the discount rate to be used at transition, and there's also a number of kind of grandfathering issues that perhaps we might need to take on. So maybe just open it up more so to make sure that the staff or we've got the population of transition issues, and to the extent there are comments on the proposals in the ED in terms of a modified retrospective method to transition.
Bill, lead us off.
Let me take a few of your points. Leverage leases, and I guess I'm making this comment just from the perspective of the airline industry. I think the concept's valid because it allows for a proper netting that you set up contractually. Now, you've got to bear in mind that if you stack it against the EIS proposal on netting, you've got to factor in the tax piece, too, which is a key component to a leverage lease. I think they should continue. In the airline industry itself, it does require having a good credit on the other end to make a leverage lease work. Surprised nobody laughed. There are no good credits really in the airline industry. There's a few, but not a lot. So I think as a transaction, it makes sense. There are a number of countries outside the U.S. that use them, especially where you have tax advantage situations. Transition itself, as far as implementation and how you should do it, with the major projects that the boards are trying to get accomplished, I really wonder whether it either makes sense to go prospective with minimal pro forma disclosure, which then Rich has to audit and he won't like, but prospective, or full retrospective. This modified retrospective of picking an arbitrary date and recasting the leases then, again, doesn't make sense. You're going to have an arbitrary date. Economics won't match the accounting. If you're going to, we're assuming U.S. reporters are going to do 5 years worth because of the SEC rule. If you're going to go back 5 years anyway, you may as well look at the lease all the way back to the beginning. And it would line up with the fact that I believe the direction on the revenue recognition project is restatement, full restatement. If you're going to make financial statements comparable, I think restatement makes sense. It does require additional work. I mean, simplistically, the most practical answer is pick a point and go forward. Cheapest, probably easiest to implement, leads to inconsistent financials unless you put performance in. How are you going to make them comparable? Full restatement.
Thanks, Bill. Well, it's another Bill, isn't it?
I think with one issue that I've run into, I've spoken before a group that was a lessor software provider, and a lessee software provider has hired me to give them specs on the lessee side because his system was an administrative system, but now it's going to have to be turned into an accounting system. And with transition as proposed, everyone is having a hard time getting to make a 2015 deadline where there are 3 years worth of comparative statements means that they have about 18 months to get this thing programmed, tested, turned over to the lessee and lessor, tested. So they don't feel that there's even enough time now to make a 2015 transition date if we require 3 years worth of comparative statements as that would all be affected by the accounting rules change. So I guess I'd like you to keep in mind that I think the transition date has to step off of the issuance date with enough time for people to get the systems done. I would like to make a plea for grandfathering on both the lessee and lessor side. Since we're moving, it seems, more towards current accounting, at least for the lessee side of things, why not just grandfather existing capital leases? And I've heard the board say all two of them, or maybe it's three. But I think there are a lot of leases out there that are capital leases, and why don't we just grandfather them? And that would make life simple. On the leveraged lease accounting side of things, I think it is a big issue, as Bill said. I've spoken to the president of one of the major U.S. banks, and his bank wants him to get rid of all of his leveraged leases because they're going to be grossed up, and it's going to create really ugly return on asset and capital issues. But he can't sell them to anyone because they're looking at the proposed accounting rules and grossing them up, and so it's creating a big economic problem for the industry. So I think grandfathering should be considered. And I'm also kind of looking at the agenda, and I see a netting project, and I think that the netting issue could be taken care of in the netting project. So in the future, we could have at least the netting that is inherent in current leveraged lease accounting accommodated by the netting project, because I don't see the financial reporting value or the information value of putting a rent receivable on my books that I can get no economic value out of and putting a liability on my books. And I think it might fit under the netting project. The other thing is, I say this, and I think John says this at every meeting, that we'd like the board to consider the tax benefits in leases. And I know I talked a little bit to Larry that it's like another project unto itself. But I think if you operate it under a principle, maybe in revenue recognition, that says that if tax benefits are fixed and they're associated with a transaction, they should be considered in revenue recognition. And today's market in the U.S., with all of the tax incentives on alternate energy, we have transactions that have incredibly low pre-tax yields but have tax credits and timing differences that make up such an enormous part of the profit that I think the revenue recognition as proposed would be distortive. So if we could get tax accounting recognized through a yield amortization as well as netting, I think we'd basically have leveraged lease accounting effects without having to keep leveraged lease accounting.
Well, I'll have a talk to David Tweedy and see if after he retires from the board he might like to take on a consulting activity on rejigging the tax accounting standard and move to a net of tax model. Surely he'd love that.
But Larry's right, that's a major
issue, which I understand there's a lot of sympathy for that, but certainly beyond the scope of this project.
But I think the bigger issue is, and John may be correct me if I'm wrong, the bigger issue is debt.
The answer is they're both big. For the banks, that's a very important issue. While leverage leasing is only a U.S. thing, is a very brave attempt to fact. Well, primarily U.S. thing. It's a very brave attempt to factor in the tax benefits. And any time you're dealing with transactions that are very tax incentive, as Bill's pointing out, a pre-tax model tends to not do them justice. And then on top of it, if you have to restate to that model, they turn what's otherwise transactions that have positive economic yields into potentially negative book returns during the early parts of them. And it's that pattern, which we think doesn't make a lot of sense. So,
any other comments on transition? Bill?
I was actually looking for my board colleague to my right because I figured he would chime in. Because Japanese leverage leases, Spanish leverage leases are the standard areas that are still pretty strong and used quite a bit. I don't know what Satsumi's position is, but if you can find a way, and maybe the way to do it is to try to build in the tax effect in the netting project that the IASB is considering. But I'd certainly grandfather them in. And it, do you lose anything by letting them go forward? No, because they're not a huge part of the leasing industry, but they can be a very effective way to finance, especially long-lived assets, with good credit.
Thanks, Bill. And who's got Mark?
No, it's just on transition. I think there are a lot of technical issues on transition with the way the accounting models were written in the exposure draft, where you were having the problem of acceleration of costs for lessees and so on, which would have been concentrated. It's actually quite hard to talk about transition issues now until we know where boards are going in terms of sorting out the accounting model, because some of those transition issues may disappear if you make certain decisions or the right decisions on the accounting models for the lessees. So I think that's something that it's very hard for people to, you know, to pronounce themselves on until we know what the models are actually going to say and look like.
And is that, because I think Bill, you said something about, you know, maybe we should go fully retrospective. I know some would say, oh gosh, that, you know, is that practical? I guess, Mike, you're saying depends on where we finish in terms of estimation of lease payments, for example, the options, terms, and so on.
Yeah.
But assuming we end up in the direction we seem to be heading at the moment, so it's certainly not as onerous, is it really feasible to expect that you can actually apply fully retrospectively? And let's assume we have this long transition period, 4 years or so.
I think that lessors generally might prefer to apply retrospectively, but that's because their business means that they, you know, by nature, keep all the standing data they need, and they know what their reasoning was when they set the lease up in the first place. So they've got the data there, and it's just an IT issue. It'll cost far more than anyone thought it ever would, and so on. But it's doable. For lessees, fully retrospective application is probably just a total nightmare because they've got to go back and open up paper files and so on. Lessors normally have got, you know, the IT information in their databases.
Hang on a minute. We'll just let Anne in because I think Anne's probably going to tell us what it's like, and then Bill.
From my company's perspective, I think we view retrospective as difficult, although I will say that there's been a couple of retailers that I've talked with who are in favor of retrospective, so it's sort of a mixed bag. I think it depends on how material leasing is in your financial statements, depending on how, I mean, it's to us, we don't think it's substantial. I mean, it's not worth the effort to do retrospective, but to some of the retailers, it would be.
So we shouldn't preclude it if it's possible.
Right. I think they were hoping for an option.
Okay. Philippe, you want to come in on that?
Yeah. Remembering the commentators I read from the preparers and from some preparer organizations, they were very worried about the P&L effect according to the model where we did not have operating lease. And they were ready to do the efforts to overcome the difficulty by doing a retrospective application of the standard to avoid the first-time effect on the P&L. For the cost of doing that was lower than the benefits of avoiding the P&L charge. And some were clearly in favor because they had made a calculation to you if the P&L would be hit, and they said, I'm ready to do the work. Now that we have probably less of a problem with the P&L, the model, and the first-time effect, if we have a proper operating lease model, in the case it falls in the category, maybe less people will be in favor of doing a retrospective application. But the question is, and I would like to have your feedback, we have a choice either to say never retrospective, or retrospective if you can, or modified approach if you can't. So in terms of comparability, I would like to ask the users, would you see a problem if we permitted for those who wish to do a retrospective application, if we let them do, would it be a problem? Would it be better than partial retrospective or modified retrospective?
Eric?
Just thinking about what the problem could be is, I'm actually thinking of the story economy for just a second, given the profit recognition and the profit elements. By having a retrospective application, we essentially could be recognizing profits that have never been recognized in the past. So clearly there could be some incentives in, you know, cherry picking. So if you put the cherry picking aside, letting people do whatever they want is somewhat troublesome. If you think it's going to be challenging, I would go to prospective, apply it entirely prospective rather than looking at cherry picking. Companies that have some opacity or users will influence the discussion, we'll ask companies to provide some performer information rather than required by the accounting standard setting, which essentially leads you to the same conclusion anyways. You're just going to be outside the financial statements. But my preference, if you think that you're ending up with two or three solutions, I would just say the financial statement should be applied entirely prospective or entirely retrospective. You know, in that spirit, I recognize it's totally incomplete. Now, the other question that I have is, in the context of practicality or in the cost, unless I miss something, that's mainly a question for the preparers. If you have leases that are currently in place and you run the leases, you're going to have to do it anyway. So it's a matter of just allocating it between years. If leases rolled off, it doesn't make a difference anyways. For those, you may actually, let me take it back, you may need to do it for those leases that were rolled off and terminated. So
you would be happy?
Yeah, I thought it's going to be the same thing, but I just recognize the cost of doing it for the past couple of years for leases that rolled off. Cool.
The most practical answer is prospective. It's probably cheapest, gives everybody enough time to get systems, people, resources. Those of us that are public, however, have to deal with Larry and his colleagues will say, what's the effect if you did prior years the same way? The threshold, since it in most cases won't be audited unless you're going out with the filing, should be lower, but you're going to have to come up with the means anyway. So from pure cost and expediency, prospective makes sense. Secondly, retrospective would be more thorough. Something in the middle, the modified one, just didn't make a lot of sense to me personally.
Okay. John?
One observation is that, you know, all lessors are also lessees as well, so I think the two issues, lessor and lessee, need to be dealt with together. As a lessor, based on what was in the exposure draft, where, for example, derecognition would have to be redone, you'd have to get new appraisals done, that's probably more work than just taking the streams that are in your system today, the information you have on the fair value, and then programming some very expensive fix to get the information. So I would say that, you know, in that regards, retrospective may be less costly, less time consuming than what was proposed.
Okay. Kevin?
I can't do fully retrospective. 25 mine sites, the youngest is 9 years, the oldest is 43. The contracts have been renewed without using hindsight. I can't go back that far for the original contract and then estimate whether I would have renewed it 27 years ago. It's just not possible. I can go back for the last comparative year you want disclosed. There's nothing further.
So modified retrospective?
Modified retrospective is the only model that you could ever adopt in the mining industry.
Okay. Russ and then Hal?
I want to talk about effective dates, so I'll defer to the transition.
Okay. Hal?
I was just going to go to Bill's comment, putting my old investor hat back on. In a perfect world where companies never change, retrospective would be fabulous information. But the reality is that most companies are changing dramatically over the years, and forcing companies to go back and do all this work and we had a conference call on another topic recently, and I asked, well, you know, if there are 100 investors in the room, how many actually pick up the financial statements and read them? How many have the capacity to read them? And the guy whittled it down to a handful out of the 100. So I would hate to see the industry on this issue or any other issue say retrospective because the analysts need it. And spent a long time on the investor side. Very honestly, very few would use it. And frankly, I think most of the information retrospective is not that usable because we tend to be much more forward-looking. And Russ and I have had this conversation several times. What I would look for as an investor is give me one hard cutoff. From this point forward, here's the accounting for it. And if you give me that information, I can get my model trued up, squared up going forward. The rest of it just gets cut off. Don't even worry about that. So, and also, I think I would want you to factor into the discussion the effects of all the other accounting standards that you deal with. This is just one of multitude. So, you know, that would personally lean me towards something along the lines of, rip the Band-Aid off one time going forward. So just a thought from an investor that a lot of this retrospective stuff, while I support it, doesn't help the analyst that much.
David?
On the question of discount rates, I see is one of the points here. I think there needs to be some consistency between the lessor and lessee, particularly if you have a back-to-back lease where you have the same rentals in, same rentals out, and you can use different discount rates under the proposals at the moment, which will produce complete nonsense.
Who is it, Rich?
Yes. Yeah, I would echo concerns about full retrospective. I think we'll find large numbers of companies that just can't do it. I would also mention, though, that whatever the transition is for revenue recognition, assuming that somehow the principles are the same on when you recognize profit up front between that and lessor accounting, you'd probably want to have similar transition, which I thought RevRec was retrospective with the latest. So I don't, somehow you got to fix that. We'd recommended a very simplified retrospective approach, which was let a company use its assumptions at date of transition and roll back on their contractual commitments using those same assumptions as if they had perfect, you know, hindsight. It'll get you closer, and it would have gotten rid of the issue of, you know, the front loading of expense under the finance lease approach versus that. So that was our suggestion to deal with it. But I don't think I think we'll have a large segment of our client base who can't do full retrospective to be here.
Thanks for that. Thomas?
Knowing that models are difficult for the users. Anyhow, I think we have set a situation where full retrospective is not possible, and we have situations, for example, for leases of used objects where a modified retrospective approach is not possible or very difficult or very much based on estimations. So I would prefer a choice for the preparers and additional information in the notes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, look, I think we might move on from there given the time, but Russ, you wanted to ask a question on effective dates?
Eventually we'll have to establish an effective date for this. So hypothetically, let's assume we go prospective. How long do you think it would take you to be in a position after implementing the systems, having the controls looked at, having the data analyzed, how long would it take? And do we need to have a different effective date for those jurisdictions where there is an endorsement process versus those that don't? And what I'm trying to get at is those that represent a jurisdiction as endorsement, do you start your process when the standard setter completes it, or do you start the process when the endorsement has been completed?
Does endorsement involve the publication of the final standard?
No, as I understand it, in some jurisdictions, the standard setter has published, and then the endorsement mechanism, while they've been involved, it is not finalized at the date of completion. In other jurisdictions, it is finalized shortly thereafter. In other jurisdictions, there is no endorsement mechanism.
But completion being a standard has been issued that people can read.
The standard setter has issued a standard that has been...
I was just differentiating that from valid.
Say again?
If people believe the standard will be endorsed, they will start. If they hope that the standard will not be endorsed, they will wait.
Okay. Is that correct, Mark?
I think that's correct.
Okay. That being said, to date, the endorsement mechanism that I'm thinking about has never actually refused to endorse a standard to date.
just been a little slow on some. So.
There'd been a carve-out or two, but that happened before you got to endorsement.
So how long do you think it would take to be in a position, if the transition was prospective, to apply this standard?
We've already done an assessment based on the exposure drop. We're not sure we captured everything. But we would take at least 2 years to identify 25 different world sites that are all self-accounting, each of the potential contracts that could be a lease.
2 years, did you say?
2 years.
Okay. Any other takers on 2 years?
Reasonable.
It sounds reasonable. The big wild card is always the lease versus service contract question, because those are the things that may not be in an existing system, even a tracking system.
So minimum of 2 years from the date that the boards complete their deliberations.
If you want 3 years comparative, then I'm asking.
Assuming we go prospective.
Get all the data, we'll start even.
Right. And then early adoption, is that something you think is good, bad, you're indifferent?
You won't get any early adopters.
Just the guy with one lease.
You would get industry non-comparability in it for a period of time when you could early adopt. But you could adopt.
Bill, did you want to make a comment?
Are you asking the same question in the other major standards? Shouldn't they all, in essence, have the same date? So RevRec, this one,
we issued a request for views on effective dates, early adoptions.
And we got mixed. 50-50.
So if you, under your assumption of prospective, I think realistically you need as many years as we have to show comparable pro forma information. Couldn't tell you, Russ, whether that's right now 3 or 5, depending on how the SEC would respond. I think the analysts would want at least 2 to go with the first transition year to have a comparable base, maybe longer. I think a minimum of 3 years. But if we ask Ms. Shapiro if it's going to be 5, give us 5. So the 2016 data, I think, had been, or maybe it was 15, had been discussed earlier. That may be feasible. That assumes we get going and start assessing it. Another concern I've got is, that's maybe less so from the lessor side, but more from the lessee side, is I wonder how many lessees really know how many leases they have that are not, that they don't know whether it's a service, executory, or a lease. And I think that's going to be an interesting, very interesting exercise.
Yeah.
Putting aside the fact they have no systems.
Fair point. Kevin?
No, sorry.
I just wanted to say to Ross that the first thing that comes in is the systems have got to be available. At the moment, they're just not there. The lessee lease accounting systems don't exist. So even if you're looking at early adoption by somebody, by the company that has 3 leases and they're all on the corner of the desk there, even that company is going to need probably 18 months, because someone's got to write them a system and they've got to install it and test it a bit. So that you've got the system's creation time, and then you've got the time to create the comparatives if you need two prior years of comparatives. So that's got to take you out to 3.5 years at a minimum. And effectively, yeah, it's the first time adoption and you don't need the comparatives, then it's probably 18 months to 2 years, but that's going to be a pretty rare case.
Thanks. Elka, did you want to? No. Okay, well, we're coming to a close. What we'd like to do now, if we could, is just go around the table. This isn't for board members, by the way, or staff, working group members. Just an opportunity to make any final comments to the boards, particularly given that we're going to be meeting this week on this very topic. If you have any last minute comments, advice you'd like to make to us, then we'd be